in these moments, we have to remember that God is faithful. We have to remember that God can pull us through very difficult seasons. We have to remember to dig in deep to God, to not reject him, to not get disillusioned by him.
Welcome to the 1 Minute Apologist podcast with Dr. Bobby Conway. Bobby is continuing the series in Ruth called Facing the Impossible.
Welcome to the 1 Minute Apologist. 1 Minute Apologist. Apologetics seeks to give credible answers to curious questions, to give a defense.
Well, every day there seems to be a new development as this global pandemic evolves, but it's good to know that God doesn't change. The one thing that the unchangingness of God means is that we can turn to his word, even the Old Testament, and find something true that helps us today. Well, over the past 3 Sundays, Bobby has been going verse by verse through the book of Ruth and drawing out parallels between the book of Ruth and our reality today. Before we get to Bobby's message, I do want to say that we know that there are some of you who may have lost a job, are struggling in various ways, and are having a hard time right now. And I want you to know that we are praying for you here at the 1 Minute Apologist. If you have prayer requests or a story you'd like to send us, please email it to info@oneminuteapologist.com. I also want to remind you that you can get a pastor's perspective from Bobby and the guys over at K-Wave Monday through Thursday on K-Wave's YouTube channel. The program is uplifting and they do a great job answering your questions. I would advise you to check it out.
I want to start off with a brief prayer and then we'll delve right in. Lord, I just pray that you'll use the teaching of your word to open our eyes to the greatness of your providential care in our lives. We love you and we praise you in Christ's name. Amen. Well, let me give a little bit of a recap of what's been going on in the book of Ruth. Remember that we started this series a couple weeks ago. This is a 4-chapter book. You begin the Bible with the law, the Torah. That is the Pentateuch, the first 5 books of the Bible. Matthew, that's the Gospels, right? That's the New Testament. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy. And this is where we see the law. This is the great series where you get, you know, Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and Abraham's promise that he'll be the father of many nations. And then Moses, as you know, he leads his people out of Egypt and then they wander in the wilderness. And then Joshua leads them into Canaan and the promised land. And then during the time that they were living in Canaan, the judges were raised up. And this is the time period, about 1300-ish to about 1380-ish to 1050-ish is the period of the judges. And this is when the book of Ruth was written. And the last verse of the book of Judges says that everyone did what was right in their own eyes. Sound familiar? Sound like a country that we've lived in our own life a little bit, right? This independent, autonomous, rejecting authority. Everyone's just doing what's right in their own eyes. Moral relativism is running rampant. And in this season, when everyone's doing what's right in their own eyes, this little gem, this 4-chapter gem, the book of Ruth, shows up. And a couple weeks ago in this series called Facing the Impossible, we said that you could really call this the book of Naomi instead of the book of Ruth, because it's all about restoring Naomi to a great place of having faith and hope in God and how God will use her abysmal circumstances to bring about basically a descendant whom Jesus Christ will ultimately come through. And you're going to see this as we move toward chapter 4. In chapter 1, what happens is things go bad. Naomi finds herself in a famine in Bethlehem. Bethlehem means house of bread. Ironically, there's no bread in Bethlehem. So the house of bread has no bread. And so what happens is Naomi and her husband Elimelech and their 2 sons, Mahlon and Chilion, their names mean sickly and puny. And we talked about that and probably had a good laugh about that. Like, wow, what should we call him? Let's call him sickly. And what about the other? Well, let's just call him puny. How would you like that for a name. If any of you are pregnant and you're looking for a good name, well, maybe you could be inspired by the book of Ruth and go with sickly or puny, or just kind of go into the original Hebrew and go with Mahlon and Chilion. But Mahlon and Chilion, Elimelech and Naomi, they leave Bethlehem and they go to Moab of all places. And in Moab, I mean, they oppressed the Israelites for many years. The Moabites, this was a pretty base group of people. And as they are in Moab, what ends up happening is things go from bad to worse. Elimelech ends up dying, her husband. And then things go from worse to impossible as Mahlon and Chilion die. So she loses her whole family. So imagine, stand in her shoes. We have to feel the weight of this. Naomi knew what it was like to have no provision. She leaves the land of her faith. Her husband's died. Her children have died. And she's in a foreign land. She has her two daughters-in-law, Orpah and Ruth. And she hears that there's food back in Bethlehem, and she begins to make her way back. But before she does, she says to Orpah and Ruth, stay. Orpah decides to stay, but Ruth says, hey, where you go, I will go. Your God will be my God. Your people shall be my people. And Ruth shows this incredible act of faith, leaving her god Chemosh of the Moabites to go and follow Yahweh and to support Naomi. And they make their way back to Bethlehem. The house of bread has bread again. And in chapter 2, we see that that God's going to providentially work through Ruth and being out in this field, this harvest field of a person by the name of Boaz. Now, it's important because at the end of chapter 1, Naomi comes back to Bethlehem. And people go, hey, isn't that Elimelech's wife, Naomi? And she says, do not call me Naomi. Call me Mara. Naomi means pleasant. Mara means bitter. So Naomi says, I'm no longer pleasant. I'm bitter. And she blamed stuff on God. She felt like God's hand was against her. And I shared, when we have a wrong theology of God, it can set us up to be bitter. And that was her. She thought God was out to get her. She thought that God was on her bad side. And it messed up her entire outlook. She could not face the impossible until she realized that God was not her enemy. And so in chapter 2, she begins to realize, oh, God's at work behind the scenes. And it was about providence, how God just so happened to have Ruth in Boaz's field. Well, what do you need when you get back to Bethlehem? You need bread, you need food, you need provision. And Ruth was younger. She would go out to the harvest field, and she found a particular field by a person name of Boaz, and Boaz would allow her to be provided for. She could go along the fringes, she could collect food, and God went before Ruth in letting Boaz know about just the way that she provided for and stood by Naomi, her mother-in-law. So her character went before her, God was raising her up, and now we come to chapter 3, and in this chapter today, we're going to talk about seizing the moment. Now, let me just take a pregnant pause and say, the book of Ruth is strategic because it hits on a lot of themes that maybe we can relate to right now, that life can change on the drop of a dime, right? Naomi left. She wasn't expecting anything like this to take place. She wasn't, sensing this at all in her life. Naomi or Ruth, they lost their loved ones, boom, just like that. And now they were in a new set of circumstances. And that can be difficult because this is kind of what the coronavirus has done, right? All of a sudden, life just changed in a moment. We didn't even anticipate it. We didn't know how to expect it. And when life changes so quickly, we can get disillusioned. We can find ourselves in a situation where we scratch our heads wondering, God, where are you? What's going on? How could you allow this to happen to me? Don't you understand that I'm not prepared to handle this season? And so in these moments, we have to remember that God is faithful. We have to remember that God can pull us through very difficult seasons. We have to remember to dig in deep to God, to not reject him, to not get disillusioned by him. And so here in chapter 3, they're beginning to see that God's faithfully working, not only Naomi, but Ruth. They're seeing that God's giving them favor. They're coming out of famine. They're in Bethlehem where there's bread. They're finding favor in the field of Boaz where they're getting food to eat, but they need security. And chapter 3, you're going to see Naomi sees the moment. You're going to see Ruth sees the moment, and you're going to see Boaz sees the moment. And when we come out of this season that we're in, this season of drought, this season of famine, this season of quarantine, there's going to be many opportunities that are going to open up for you. And we have to keep our eyes open. Right now, we're in quarantine, and we can use quarantine to reflect, to think, to get our theology right, to get our perspective right, to be able to trust God. But when we come out of this, we want the kind of perspective that we're keeping our eyes open. We want to look for the waves that God's forming and ride them and realize that there's opportunity to come, that God's going to use this. And this is the time to be growing in our spiritual sensitivity. And what's neat is we're going to see the spiritual sensitivity of a Naomi grow and be attuned to what God is up to. So with that said, let's delve in and see some things that we can learn together today in chapter 3 of Ruth. As I'm turning there myself. Okay, so here we are, verse 1. Then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, "My daughter, should I not seek rest for you, that it may be well with you?" So Naomi's going to seize the moment. "May I seek rest for you?" See, Naomi has been so blown away by Ruth's faithfulness to her. Now, what does she want to do? She wants to be faithful and supply and make sure that Ruth is taken care of. And what is Ruth going to need? A provider. She's going to need security. She's going to need provision. Because what's going on? The harvest, the barley harvest is coming to an end. And while she's found food for this season, she's thinking down the road, like, well, food's going to run out. And it's hard for a female in this day and age that we're reading in the Bible to just go out and get provisions, especially a Moabite. So she is definitely looking out for her, because Ruth certainly looked out for her. So, excuse me, I swallowed the wrong way. She says, "Is not Boaz our relative, with whose young woman you were? See, he is winnowing barley tonight at the threshing floor." So pretty cool. There was a threshing floor that would be located in town, and it would be a shared threshing floor. And what would happen is you would bring the stalks, right? And then you would have oxen stepping all over them, and you would have... Yeah, my brother's texting in now, asking if I have coronavirus. I'd like to respectfully ask the family to avoid the text in this moment, because, but no, I don't have coronavirus. Man, now leave it to my brother, right? No, I don't have coronavirus. My wife just walked in and slammed the door. Great. If I could just get a little peace from the family, now my wife said, "I was getting you water," but she is a good wife, right, in that way. So seek rest that it may be well for you. Naomi was out for herself in chapter 1. Now she's out for Ruth. So I love that. A sign of coming out of pain, a sign of coming out of being disillusioned, is we can actually look out for others. We can keep our eyes open. When we're drowning in our own despair, when we're drowning in our own depression, when we're drowning in our own emptiness, we can't think about other people. You know somebody's in horrific pain when you talk to them, and all they can talk about is their pain. So this is a good sign that Naomi's thinking, "Hey, I'm going to seize the moment for you, Ruth. We need to make sure that you're provided for. We need to make sure that you have care and protection." So I love that. Mara makes you bitter, right? That's what it means. Mara is to be bitter, and it makes you self-focused. We can see that she's getting a spark of hope. She's returning to Naomi. She's returning to Pleasant again. So her perspective is changing. Now, when harvesting takes place, let me just share a little bit about this, because this is where they're seeing God's provision. And you got to love this. Like it says in chapter 2 that, you know, she happened to end up in Boaz's field, right? It literally in the Hebrew, when her chanced, like it wasn't chance. This is providential. God's working in amazing ways. When her chance, and what's so cool about this is God's providing in ways that they never even expected. And this is what I want to say right now, that when we come out of this, you're going to get provided for. Maybe some of you right now are unemployed. Maybe some of you right now are just watching the bank just tumble your account. And God's going to provide for you in ways that you can't expect, and maybe ways you don't expect. But here's the deal. We will get through this. And just as we're seeing Naomi and Ruth get through this, we can trust that God's going to give his own story through our lives of his provision. And so harvesting threshing, these were cooperative enterprises, basically. The men of the village, they would take turns on the threshing floor, as I said, and the threshing floor would be on a raised up platform outside the village. And it would often take place during the evening, because the evening breeze would allow them to be able to separate the wheat, right, from the chaff, so to speak. Once the grain was separated on the stalks, what they would do is the workers would often pick up the grain once the breeze would fall. The breeze would come through, the grain would fall down to the ground, and they would pick it up. And they would sleep next to the grain at nighttime. Why is that? So that thieves wouldn't come in and steal all that they acquired during the harvest. This is going to be instrumental as the passage carries on. So they worked during the evening when there was a breeze. Now, let's keep reading. We come to verse 2. Is not Boaz our relative with whose young women you were? See, he is winnowing barley tonight at the threshing floor. Wash, therefore, and anoint yourself, and put on your cloak and go down to the threshing floor. But do not make yourself known to the man until he has finished eating and drinking. So many scholars would say that Ruth had been wearing her mourning garments. That is not mourning, but mourning because she was a widow. And they speculate that Naomi is saying, take off your mourning wear. It's time for you to change your clothes, to put on basically your faith clothes. So Naomi saying, hey, let's take off the mourning clothes and get dressed, get looking pretty. My light just went off above me. So if you see that it went dark, that's because I got a ring light that that just went off. So let's not worry about that, because I don't want to stop and tweak on that. But in this particular setting, Naomi, once again, she's getting hope. She's getting light. She's finding joy. She's saying, take off the mourning clothes. Now she says, I want you to go down to the threshing floor, because she knew that, you know what, the barley harvest is ending. There's going to be a party tonight. Boaz is going to be at it. They're going to be eating. It's going to be festivities. And when he goes to the threshing floor, I want you to be ready. Verse 4, but when he lies down, observe the place where he lies. Okay. Then go and uncover his feet and lie down, and he will tell you what to do. Carpe diem, seize the moment. Right? Now, that's kind of an odd request to us. Imagine your mother-in-law, you know, saying to you, okay, look, you know, I know my son's no longer alive, and I want you to go down to the harvest field, and I want you to note where he falls asleep, and just go lay next to him, and then uncover his feet at night. And you're like, this is kind of a bizarre request. Well, we can't understand the Bible if we try to understand it through a 21st century milieu. We have to step inside of the shoes of the times the scripture was written. And so observe the place where he lies and go and uncover his feet and lie down. He'll tell you what to do. So basically she's saying, go propose to him. You know, go after him. He is a kinsman, or he is a redeemer, but there's somebody closer as a closer kinsman, as we're going to learn about. So let's keep reading together. Verse 5, and she replied, all that you say, I will do. Once again, this is what you got to love about Ruth. She's faithful. Now she's going to carpe diem. She's going to seize the moment. Verse 6, so she went down to the threshing floor and did just as her mother-in-law had commanded her. And when Boaz had eaten and drunk, and his heart was merry. Now, this doesn't necessarily mean that he was inebriated. He was probably just very happy, for sure, because of the barley success that they had. You know, after the end of the barley season, they had harvested a lot. But no doubt, you know, we don't want to just make the Bible say things that make us feel like, oh, okay, but, you know, the wine was diluted or whatever. I mean, he probably did have a couple glasses of wine and his heart was merry and he was full and satisfied. And it says he went down to lie at the end of the heap of grain. Then she came softly and uncovered his feet and lay down. Now, why uncover his feet? Well, probably not to expose him completely, right? Like, I mean, surprise, just take the entire blanket off the dude, right? So she goes and she uncovers his feet and lies down. And let's keep reading. Verse 8, at midnight, the man was startled and turned over, and behold, a woman lay at his feet. I would say so. You know, there's been lots of rude awakenings in life. We think about Adam. He has his surgery and he wakes up and boom, here's Eve. We think about the story with Jacob and he wakes up and he's married to the wrong woman. Surprise, right? He gets Leah instead of Rachel. We think in this particular incident, what takes place is now Boaz wakes up and young Ruth, this woman of virtue who he's been blown away by, is lying next to him. And what a surprise, right? We keep reading. He was startled. And verse 9, he said, who are you? Right? At this moment, he's like, who is this? And she answered, I am Ruth, your servant. She says, spread your wings over your servant, for you are a redeemer. Now, spread your wings over. This is an image of what? Protection, of security. And she says, you are a redeemer. Now, let me talk about this idea of a redeemer in scripture. Now, there, as you're going to see, there was a closer redeemer to Naomi and to Ruth than Boaz. But he certainly is in line to be a redeemer if the closer redeemer would not basically assume Ruth. Now, here's what's going on. In the Bible, what would happen is if you were married, like my brother who just so rudely texted a little bit ago telling me, you know, do I have coronavirus, right? So if I was to die, it would be Tim's responsibility. Tim Conway, yes, not the comedian Tim Conway. Well, yeah, he's kind of funny. But it would be Tim's responsibility if we lived in Bible times to marry Heather. He would be a kinsman redeemer. And by a kinsman redeemer, it would mean that he would ensure for me, since I died, to take care of Heather and vice versa, so that basically my legacy could go on through Tim. And if Tim denied the opportunity to marry Heather and take care of Heather and provide for Heather, then it would go to the next closest redeemer. And this was the way the culture took care of their family and of their relatives. But some people wouldn't like the idea of doing this, right? It meant tapping into their own financial wealth. It would mean maybe taking care of somebody they did or did not like that much. It would mean raising more children. But it was the right thing to do. And that's kind of what Ruth then is recognizing. You're a redeemer. Spread your wings over me. Give me security. And there you see one of the roles of a husband, to provide security, to provide shelter, to provide protection. And so let's keep reading together. Verse 10, and he said, may you be blessed by the Lord, my daughter. You have made this last kindness greater than the first, in that you have not gone after young men. So she impresses him once again that she was not looking for young men or just going after maybe just the young, wealthy men, that she actually came to him. And this touched her, this touched Boaz in a deep way, whether poor or rich, he says. Verse 11, and now my daughter, do not fear. Ah, what good words, right? Do not fear. He says, I will do for you all that you ask, for all my fellow townsmen know that you are a worthy woman. And she's been the talk of town ever since her and Naomi came back from Moab to Bethlehem. They all know about what a worthy woman she is. And how cool is that? Here's this new convert, right? She's left Chemosh. She's following Yahweh. And here's this new convert, this Moabite, burning with a passion for God. And now her reputation goes before her. Don't you love that when God just gets a hold of somebody and you see that fresh, young zeal, and it's just encouraging the life of those around them. And so verse 12, and now it is true that I am a redeemer, yet there is a redeemer nearer than I. Remain tonight, and in the morning, if he will redeem you, good, let him do it. But if he's not willing to redeem you, then as the Lord lives, I will redeem you. Lie down until the morning. A couple things to note here. You see him saying, we need to be patient. There's some matters that we have to take care of. You think that he would have easily thought, sure, let's secure this deal right now. What does that tell you about Boaz? It tells you that he had some self-control. I mean, he had a young, beautiful woman lying right next to him, waking him up, saying, spread your wings over me. And he models self-control. Wait, first, we need to make sure that we go to the Redeemer that is nearer than I. And what does that show? It shows his character, that he's willing to follow the right order. It shows that he's not impulsive. And you got to love that, because it would have been real easy for him to say, yeah, let's seal the deal right now, right? Let's just make love and, you know, little Lionel Richie all night long, and let's just do this thing right here, right now. But he doesn't do it, right? He puts the brakes on. And I admire that in him. Remain here tonight, and in the morning, if he will redeem you, good, let him do it. So exuding character, exuding self-control, exuding commitment. He's going to be a person of his word. These are the type of things that a foundation of love is built on. When we lose some of those aspects, what happens is our relationships are tested. When we have a good marriage, it's because commitment's there, character's there, self-control is there, a willingness to sacrifice is there, patience is there, and they have all the ingredients there in place to have a healthy, harmonious relationship. So let's keep reading. Verse 14. So she lay at his feet until the morning, but arose before one could recognize another. And he said, let it not be known that the woman came to the threshing floor. And he said, bring the garment. Well, before I look at that next verse, he is trying to protect Ruth from anybody seeing her. Why? Because it's obvious that the situation is a little bit risque. It could be, you know, creating a bunch of town gossip, and he wants to protect that from happening. And so he wants her to head out before other people wake up. Not because he's trying to be deceptive, not because they slept together. They were pure in this moment, but here's why. Because it wasn't uncommon for prostitutes to come out to the threshing floor and to take advantage of these situations. Hey, these people had some money. They just had a harvest. They could pay for some intimacy right now. And he did not want anybody to falsely accuse Ruth, a noble woman, of such a deed. And so he says, go on, get out of here. Now, why did Ruth feel it such a rush to seize the moment? That's a question that I had when I read the text. I go, well, why can't they just wait till morning? Why such, you know, a drama of going out to the threshing floor at night and waiting until he falls asleep? I wish there was more detail in the text there. I think that you're left to speculate a little bit. I think that you can say something like the barley harvest is coming to an end. And, you know, they're going to close up shop. And they're just trying to seize the moment because they don't want to run out of food. And they want to make sure that they, you know, go back and see Boaz as quickly as they can on this evening, because he's already been showing favor to Ruth in the midst of this harvest. So while it's coming to a culmination, go out and see him again before, you know, he goes on to other things. That's really about the best that I have. In fact, if you have other comments on that, feel free to post them. I'd be glad to read that. But it doesn't mean there's not even greater reasons that we can't be aware of. One of the things we have to do when reading the Bible is we have to take what we have and interpret it as faithfully as we can. When we're not sure, we can work through some speculations. We can go into other texts and see if the Bible would reinforce stuff. We can go to extra biblical literature to see if there's any extra stuff that we can learn. And then if we can't really come to some good conclusions on something, we can just know that it's not like this was absurd to Ruth, nor was it absurd to Boaz. I mean, Boaz wasn't like, how dare you come out? He was blown away by it. He thought it was awesome. He thought, this is amazing. You've shown something of your character in this way. So Naomi seizes the moment in sending Ruth. Ruth seizes the moment in going. And now Boaz will seize the moment in trying to make sure that he can take care of her. So we keep reading in the text, verse 15, and he said, bring the garment you are wearing and hold it out. So she held it, and he measured out 6 measures of barley and put it on her. Then she went into the city. So here's what's cool about this. He made sure by giving her that barley that Naomi was taken care of. It was his way of saying, not only will I take care of you, but I will take care of Naomi. Verse 16, and when she came to her mother-in-law, she said, how did you fare, my daughter? She told her all that the man had done for her, saying, these 6 measures of barley he gave to me, for he said to me, you must not go back empty-handed to your mother-in-law. See, he was showing that he's going to care for her mother-in-law. And I love that about Boaz. I mean, he has the kind of heart that Ruth does. Ruth had a heart to take care of Naomi, but Boaz has a heart to take care of his potential future mother-in-law, if you could call her that, you know? Not officially, but, you know, it's not as if Naomi would be Boaz's mother-in-law, because Naomi was the mother of Mahlon and Chilion, but he is going to treat her as if she is his mother-in-law. And in a good act of faith, what he is showing is provision. And what would you want if you just had been living without a spouse? You'd want provision. You'd want security. And Boaz is fit for the task. He's the kind of man that will provide. And so, verse 18, she replied, wait, my daughter, until you learn how the matter turns out, for the man will not rest, but will settle the matter today, right? He will settle the matter today. He will seize the moment. He will get after it. So we've made it through chapter 3. And chapter 3 really is going to nicely prepare the way for chapter 4. Now, next week, I'm not going to get into chapter 4. I'm going to do a message, an apologetic message, actually, on the resurrection of Jesus next week. And I hope you'll tune in for that. I really just want to help arm you with good evidences for the resurrection of Jesus. And I want to help you to be able to deal with the objections that skeptics and atheists and agnostics alike will use to kind of shut down the resurrection. I want to help you to feel stronger as a Christian, to be able to witness in that arena. And then the following week, we will turn our attention to chapter 4 of Ruth. So let's kind of step back and recap what we've learned in chapter 3 today. Chapter 3 is about seizing the moment. Naomi seizes the moment on behalf of Ruth to make sure that she provides for her a future provider in Boaz. That's the hope. Naomi seizes the moment and following Ruth seizes the moment and following Naomi's words and getting after it. And then Boaz seizes the moment in chapter 4. He's going to get after it and make sure that he can take care of Ruth, be it himself as the redeemer or by going to the nearer kinsman redeemer. So they're out of the time of famine in chapter 3. In chapter 1, Bethlehem's in a famine. Now they're out of the famine. A lot's happened between chapter 1 and chapter 3. Ruth and Naomi have both lost husbands. Naomi has lost her husband and children. They have traveled long and far together from Moab back to Bethlehem, but their hope is being restored. And I want to say that if we're going to seize the moment, we have to make sure we deal with our disillusionment. Maybe you're in that place right now where you're disillusioned. You're just depressed. You're downcast. If you're in that kind of a spot, it's going to be very hard to recognize where God's at work in your life. And so this is a great opportunity. We can seize the moment right now of digging deeper in our spiritual life, of getting our theology down, recognizing that God is a providential God. What is providence? We see it all through the book of Ruth. Providence is God's arranging of circumstances in such a way that they work in concord with human will so as to show those humans that God is working through, that he is totally in the midst of their circumstances for good. And we have to see that God is a good God, that he's a benevolent God, that he hasn't forsaken us. And we have to know and believe and deepen in our faith in this way, like we've never done before. We have to find ourselves getting excited thinking about how God's going to provide for us. We have to find ourselves getting excited about how God wants to minister through us. We have to find ourselves excited modeling joy, modeling that trust in the Lord with all of our heart, right? That kind of a mindset right now. And God can use you. I want to encourage you. I want you to know that God has not given up on you, that God can use you, that God will be faithful, that God can be trusted, that God can provide for you in ways that you can't possibly imagine. And I want you to see the word of God taking root in your own heart. And right now, I would ask that we could all just trust God and be the kind of Christians that God would so desire us to be. Look, I get it. I get what it's like to get into despair, to get disillusioned, to get empty, to lose my trust in God. Oh, how I get that. But now is a time where we have the greatest opportunity. Revivals happen and throughout church history. Great awakenings happen throughout church history. When on the backdrop of a difficult time. And this is a challenging time, but it's also where we're seeing people rise up and pray, dig into the word, trust God, and looking to God, where many people can start turning back to God again.
If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe. If you want to help spread the word, please leave us a 5-star review and tell your friends about this resource. Also, be sure to check out our YouTube channel and blog for more credible answers to curious questions.